Welcome to the Mental Health Minute podcast. My name is Chris Salyards, and I'm the executive director for the Bridge Youth and Family Services. We provide mental health and family stabilization services to youth and families in our community. Through our podcast, we will talk to partners and experts, learn from Bridge staff, and talk with individuals who've received support through our services and who've become stronger as a result. Normalizing the conversation around mental health creates healthier individuals, families, and communities. Looking forward to sharing with you. Hi, everybody. I'm Chris Salyards, the executive director from the Bridge Youth and Family Services, and I'd like to welcome you to our podcast, The Mental Health Minute. This podcast is really meant for us to bring you into our waiting room, our therapy room, to have an additional opportunity for some support for you and for anybody that you think may be able to use this information. We're going to be talking to friends, colleagues, therapists, experts, just to kind of help all of us navigate the issues that we're all facing around mental health. So tune in. We hope that you enjoy the show. And I'd like to get started with my first guest, Mallory Whalen, who is a friend of mine, and I've known you for a while. And we're just going to talk about being moms and parents of teenage girls.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you and I have talked for a while about sort of the things facing our kids, mm-hmm. you know, athletes, overachievers, mm-hmm. AP students, wanting the college scholarships. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've noticed both in my work and in my kids is that the social pressures are just crushing our kids. And post-COVID, it's gotten a lot worse, mm-hmm. right? There's just this pressure to achieve, succeed, take the AP classes, get on the varsity team, right? Yep. So wanted to just kind of punt this back to you and, you know, ask you kind of what you're seeing.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing, really. The pressures are put on from the schools, from themselves, from social media, not even necessarily from me. And I know you're the same, right? But all the different influences come and put pressure on them to kind of meet some expectation that's probably not realistic, but also really scary and hard for them. So I definitely am seeing it in all three. I have three girls, one in junior high, seventh grade, and then a freshman and a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. And we see it in all the different places.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen anxiety in my youngest, and I don't think that I recognized even as her parent as an LCSW, I didn't recognize that she was having anxiety until I started really paying attention and watching her ask repeatedly, like, when are we going to this place? You know, how long are we going to be there? And she would ask the same question four times. And so I realized that she was just not feeling very grounded. Have you seen that in your own kids?
Yeah, I think my older two are more obvious. I've been able to see a lot based on kind of how they behave, right? So I've noticed differences as they've grown up where their whole mannerisms have changed, or little things here and there that then kind of add up have changed. And then I have something similar with my youngest. It's very subtle. And I focus a lot on my older two because it's very more obvious mental health, but she does similar things of like the questioning or like, mom, we need to be ready. Like, it's time to go. And like really like worrying and stresses herself out where it's like, she just keeps asking or saying the same thing over and over, even every day for school. Mm-hmm. Like we leave at 7:20, but starting at about 7:14, maybe a little earlier. It's like, okay, are you ready, mom? Are you ready to go? It's like, yeah, I'm ready. But like, are you ready? Right. Like trying to figure out like how to balance that. But it comes out as this overly questioning, or stating the same thing over and over that I see in her.
Yeah. And I've heard it more and more from people. You know, parenting kids is really hard these days. And I think parenting kids has always been hard. I always tease that there's a reason why apprenticeships existed in the 1800s because nobody wants to be around their teenager. You know, but I think that one of the things that's been challenging for a lot of parents that I've seen is that they just, the kids are in their room all the time with the door closed and they're in their phones and, you know, you're not, they don't feel empowered. Parents don't feel empowered to take the cell phone or to look in the cell phone. And so there's a part of us as parents who don't really know what's happening because it's such a private book that they have access to that, you know, we can't even read their diaries anymore, which is what our parents did to us, you know? So what are you seeing from, I mean, can you relate to that?
I can. I will say that like in our house before we got phones or kind of as the process went along, it was, we had two rules from the start. One was we don't keep our phones in our room at night. And the other is like, it's our phones. We have access to it. That being said, it's still hard to get information. I will check every now and then, and it has enlightened me to a couple things here and there. But overall, like they're tech savvy. They know how to get around a lot of stuff or know how to make sure like they know I'm checking it or something, then they'll make sure that they, you know, erase that and it's not available for me to even look at. And so I feel like it, even with that access, right? Like we have to have codes, we have to have everything. It still is very hard and it's not really a true picture of what's really happening.
Yeah. I think my daughter told me there's an app that the high school uses and I want to say it's called Barstool. And they use that to plan all of their senior ditch days and all of the stuff. And I'm like, is there any adult in this, you know? And I try to ask curious questions. I keep reminding myself to stay curious and not interrogating, because they know the difference, you know? So, I think it is a challenge. And one of the things that I see more and more of, is that I think a lot of parents respond from a place of fear. Totally. So fear-based parenting, which feels like lots and lots of questions being thrown at the kids, right? Lots and lots of door opening, lots and lots of like what feels overprotective to them just feels to us like I need to know everything there is to know.
Yes.
Which is funny because when we were coming up, I mean, I don't think my parents knew where I was most of the time or what I was doing. And it just feels different now.
Yes. And I have better conversations than me and my mom ever did. And I do know more in some ways. But also that piece of like that fear, and it's hard. You're living in it, right? And that idea of like trying to be curious versus trying to, you know, like the first time I saw something on my oldest phone, I was like, What is this? Like, right? Like you live from that like fear and like, oh my gosh, this is happening to my kid. And I just found out about this. And it's like, we have to work on ourselves to be able to not do that. Right. And I've done it a bunch of times, you know, and I'm constantly working on figuring out what's the best and how to be the best to get that, build those relationships and keep them, because it's so easy to break that trust with kids nowadays. Because again, it is kind of secretive. It is kind of this closed book. They get to choose kind of what they tell us. It was the same when we were kids, right? But again, kind of like trying to figure it out without actually having any knowledge, but we want to know more. I feel like my mom and dad, I had great relationships with them, but we didn't share much information, right? And it wasn't as open, like open dialogue, I think is huge. And trying to have those relationships where it is trust versus just parenting and fear, but at the same point, it's a delicate, right? Like as a parent to watch kind of how what we do or what we say is difficult in terms of not parenting from fear, essentially.
Yeah, and it is. It's really about finding the capacity within yourself to think about how what you're putting out in the universe is what that feels like to kids. And I think they have such a broad exposure to a wide variety of emotions. And everybody's talking about feelings, everybody.
Yes.
And they're using words like you're gaslighting me. And I'm like, I'm your parent. I can't gaslight you. Yep. I mean, and that's not true, right? Because some people do, but they've become more savvy. Our kids have become more savvy and they're learning faster and they're doing more and self-diagnosing.
Yep.
Right? Yep. TikTok told me I have dysmorphia. You actually have a normal, healthy, adolescent view of self. So let's kind of unpack what you think is dysmorphia. What does that mean to you? But we almost have to become, as parents, we almost have to carry this language kit with us that helps us relate to them, because they know so much more than we did at their age.
Yeah.
You know? And so it is terrifying. It's a really raw feeling and creates family conflict. And we see a lot of family conflict.
Yeah.
Parents who want to take the phones and maybe who give a lot of consequences and who are driving through, like, you know, logical consequence on top of consequence on top of consequence. Yeah. And then what we see is the kids have nothing else to lose.
So who cares?
So they don't care, you know? And then that's when some of the more risk-taking behavior steps in. And so it's also helping parents find ways to relate to their kids and to think about natural versus logical consequences. And natural consequences win 100% of the time in kids. Because when they feel what happens when they don't do something, then they start to internalize that, you know?
I think there's also the piece of kids' brains are developing at a slower rate, right? And we still have these expectations of what we did when we were that age. I, through work, do Ukiru, which is a trauma-informed practice, but the research is showing that kids' frontal lobes is not developing until about at least 25 or later. And when we were kids, it was 20, maybe 21, right? And so we have these expectations of what they should be able to do. And then we think, oh, well, like my oldest is driving. It's like, well, you're driving. You should be responsible for this, right? But like the real world problem solving is not happening as much as it used to, which is slowing down that development.
Right.
And so looking at what really is age appropriate at this point and how those feelings all get tied into it. And then the lack of having those problem solving, which is again, why, you know, like, I always want to try to encourage her to like kids to be out of their rooms and encourage them to come and do things with us. And, but there's a fine line too, because everybody else does this. Right. And, it makes it challenging to parent as just kind of trying to figure out the social media piece as well and phones and.
Yeah. I mean, that is it. And everybody's doing it. And I remember saying, I remember standing in the living room and telling my mom, I have to go to this party. Everybody's going. And she's like, everybody's not going because you're not going. You know, and I try to say something like that now. And I'm thinking, what good reason do I have to not let them go?
Right.
You know, because I want them to be able to learn what's healthy and I want them to learn how to socialize. But I'm afraid, you know, that there might be alcohol or I'm afraid there might be, you know, drugs or whatever. And so I often tell the kids, like, listen, this is your time. You have to be home. And if you get in trouble, this is what you text me.
Yeah, we have the secret word too.
No questions asked, you know, but don't get into a car if you've been drinking and don't get into a car if someone else has been drinking. And just call us.
Yep.
Because there's no reason to risk anything for fear of getting in trouble. Because you've already known that you've broken the rule. So you already know that you probably will have a consequence. So now that you've done it, now you just live with it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep. We said the same. Like, this is, you know, here's our code word. It means come get me. I messed up, right? And then we're not going to talk about it until things have settled down. So it's not a conversation we're having right then. Or a fight we're going to have in that moment, right? It's going to be something that we talk about later on to really make sure that, like, we talk through, right? Like, you reached out. That's a huge step, right? If you're willing to kind of call for that help, like, I need it, I realize it. But that's kind of that natural consequence, right? Like, I messed up, I drank, but now I need mom to come pick me up, right? Like, it kind of goes back and forth. But it's also that fear for them of, like, missing out. Right? Like, social media has created so much of, like, perfectionism or, like, need to be a certain way or to fit in or to, you know, we wouldn't know in the past, like, until you got to school or whenever that was, that really not everybody went to that party, whereas they'd be seeing it right then and there, right? It would be live and happening and they'd be getting information. So it's just very different in terms of how they're given information, how quickly they need to, or they are responding to it as well.
Yeah. And I think that that creates this intense pressure, which is, you know, I can't miss out on this. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are going here. These people are going there. Or I couldn't get a hold of my friend. She said she was out, but actually I see on Snapchat she's in this party.
Yep.
That I wasn't invited to. And so it's heartbreaking to watch, but those are also moments of opportunity where we can sort of use that space to teach them and to guide them. And, you know, I guess because I used to work with homeless teens and they'd come to us at 13, 14, 16. Yeah. And from that experience, I learned acutely, we had like 40 girls in our program at one time. And I learned from that experience, you're the captain of your own ship. You know what's best for you in this moment, right? So how can I help give you the tools you need to make good decisions? Mm-hmm. And I went to a lecture at Alexian. Well, it was Alexian. I think it's Ascension now. I went to a lecture from this New York neuropsychologist. He was phenomenal. And I can't remember his name, so shame on me. But he talked about that our parents raised us. It was the don't come inside until it's dark, until mm-hmm. the streetlights come on. I've seen on TikTok, you know, we drank out of the hose.
Yes.
Right. And it was sort of like, you're just out yep. until it's time to come in. And when it's time to come in, you go to bed. And as a result, in kind, our generation created the Gold Star helicopter parent, where everybody wins and everybody, nobody goes anywhere without our approval. And, you know, we need to make sure we know where you are at all times. And what his suggestion was that we act as lighthouse parents, where you actually are showing kids how deep they can swim, where the rocks are, and your job is just to shine the light for them so that they can swim right on their own. And I thought that was, as a visual thinker, I thought that was such a great analogy, because we don't know what we're doing 900% of the time.
Not at all.
I mean, and the firstborns get the brunt of it, right? Yep. Because you make all the greatest mistakes with the firstborn. And then by the third, you're like,
they're there.
They're easy, yeah. You know? And so it's finding new ways to connect as parents, because all of our jobs are hard. Mm-hmm. And mental health is a real part of what it is that we are trying to tackle mm-hmm. in our daily role with them.
Yeah. And I work as a teacher, but I'm a special ed behavior coach, and I support kids that have mental health in the 28 schools in our district. And for me, going in and working with kids in the school for during the day, right? Like, I can guide and I can help and teach those skills that are needed for them to be able to function. But then you come home and it's your own kids, and we're super present. But I think it's that fear that you mentioned earlier that like holds me back, right? Like I have an idea of best practices and really what works. But then there's times where like, the mental health of my own child's or children get in the way of kind of what I do on a daily basis, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, I know what I should be doing, and not that I'm not, right? Like, I'm doing the best I can. And I have knowledge about it, right? And it's still difficult. Mm-hmm. So being aware of all that in mental health is still not even all that goes into it, mm-hmm. right? Like, I still catch myself messing up, or I try to remind myself of things. I have post-its around the house of like reminders of things like, okay, remember, Mallory, this isn't about you. Mm-hmm. Like, right. Like, it's not about me. What's happening? It has to do with something else. And now we have to problem solve together. I have to hear and validate and then trust that she'll use her, like, her best judgment in order to succeed and make those good choices. But with the like being there, right. Like that idea of the light to guide instead of just tell them. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. It's really hard.
And, you know, my daughters have given me so much grief. They're like, we're never going to have a normal childhood thanks to you, you know, thanks to your job, you know? And I'm like, that's not exactly true, right. You know? But even my oldest, she finally found an opportunity to tell me because I always worry about her the most. And I think it's because she's my firstborn.
Yep.
You know, I didn't put her down for a full year. By the third, you're like, oh my gosh, somebody take the baby.
Yep.
Not really. I mean,
I know what you mean.
Children.
I know what you mean.
But, you know, so she finally said to me, she's like, I don't need you to feel like you have to solve my problems. I just need you to listen to what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And if you just listen, then maybe I can figure it out on my own. And I thought that that was such a profound thing for her to say, because I'm like, so you don't tell me things because you think I'll try to solve your problems. So you have to cue me up to listen so that I don't even think about solving your problems so you can solve them. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give this a good college try. It's incredibly difficult.
Yes.
Because you don't want to see your kids uncomfortable. Yep. But more importantly, you don't want to feel uncomfortable because you didn't do what you thought you should do mm-hmm. to make their lives better. You know?
Yeah, I think that's huge. And in my oldest and I have talked a lot about this because she will say like, just stop. I don't want to hear what you have to say. And I'm like, you know, translating that to mean basically the same thing. Right. So we've come up with like, do you want me to listen or do you want me to help? Right. And even when she says, listen, sometimes it is so hard not to give my opinion. Right. Like I'm not telling you what you have to do. This is just how I feel. Right. And it's like, she's like, mom, now you're just telling me anyway. So like, you're not right. And it's so difficult to just listen and hear and validate and work through it. Right. Because they have knowledge, they have skills. We're just not giving them those opportunities, mm-hmm. which again helps with that brain development, but it's hard not to, it's scary. Mm-hmm. Right. It's again, that fear that we are going to mess them up because we don't know and we don't have that control over, mm-hmm. over the situation. Mm-hmm. Right. And it is so different from where we grew up.
It is so different. And, you know, it's funny now because I think so we're talking about all these things about what they are going through and what they're exposed to, but they're also worried about making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I are not yellers. We do not raise our voice to our kids. We get very stern with our kids, but we do not yell at our kids. We don't, you know, and it's just because since they've been little, we've always used conversation to handle issues. And so my husband actually has a very stern voice. And so when he goes into that mode, they cannot function. Mm-hmm. But what we try to tell them, and then we try to support them, is this is the time you should be making mistakes, because there are level one mistakes and there's level seven mistakes. Yeah. And once they start driving and using the vehicle and have freedom to go wherever they want, they are open to a lot more opportunities to mess up.
Yep.
And so, you know, we've even said to our oldest, who's had a pretty decent series of mistakes, and, you know, she's like, am I grounded? And, you know, and I'm like, will that make you a better driver?
Right.
You know, if you crash the car, if I ground you, are you going to be a better driver because of that? No, but you are going to pay for the car. Like, this is on you now. Thankfully, Dad and I have really good insurance. So trying to make the space for them to screw up. And I always tell them, like, this is your opportunity. Because we're here, we can support you, we can help you. And so making the creation of opportunities for learning, being on the same page in your partnership mm-hmm. about what that looks and feels like, you know? So being prepared, because every single teenager in the history of teenagers is going to do all the things we tell them not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't control that, right? Yep. And so how do we find in ourselves, be our own lighthouse? How do we find in ourselves, like, here are the things that are acceptable mistakes. Here are the things that are going to create a different level of response. And here's this level of response.
Yeah.
And being prepared for that.
Yeah. And I think I say something very similar to my girls. I always say, like, you're under our guardianship until you're 18, because that's how you learn, right? You learn through your mistakes. That's what everything is. Even in education, in mental health, in choices in everything. But you mentioned even your husband and how he's a little more stern. And I was kind of considered myself a yeller. I feel like I do like, but really I think I'm just that stern piece. And when dad gets stern, it's louder, deeper, scarier. Right. And so they're used to mine. And then, so when I'm in it, it's normal. It's okay. We have conversations and my husband can't understand why it's different. And I'm like, I think I'm just consistent. Like they hear the things, they hear it. And then it becomes stern. Like there's a point of which, and so that consistency by me makes it easier for them to respond. My husband sometimes lets things go or like it builds, right? Instead of just like kind of that consistent, like, here's what we're saying, here's where it's at. And then all of a sudden, one day it'll be still a conversation. And then the next day it'll be more of that stern, like I'm your parent kind of a thing. And so it's harder for them to then have a conversation because they don't know what they're going to expect, right? Yeah. But that takes self-control on our end. And my husband and I have to agree on what kind of are those pieces and boundaries. And so what he thinks maybe is unacceptable or acceptable, I might have a different opinion on. And so that also adds another layer of challenge. We grew up very differently. He had very different expectations. And so we just have to work together and communicate together, trying hard not to do that in front of kids, right? We try to present that cohesive front. But then be able to talk about like, hey, why was this one okay? But this, right? And like trying to figure out how are we going to parent to really make sure that we're kind of sending the same message, if that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's it. The two hardest jobs in your life are marriage and children, mm-hmm. hands down.
Yep.
And you know, I know with people who look like they have it all figured out and you know, they don't. They have it all buttoned up when they leave their homes, you know? And so I think that's we're all human and we're all doing the best we can. Mm-hmm. And I think what's extremely challenging is yes, when you have another parent involved and you're not on the same page, that creates even more issues mm-hmm. for the kids. But what I see a lot of is single parents who are really trying to figure this out and they just don't have that support system. So what advice do you think you would give to a parent who's in the middle of it with a very tight support system, like not a lot there for them? What advice would you give them?
I think a couple things. I think there's a lot of supports out there that we don't even know about, right? So reaching out to someone, whether it's the kid's school or a friend or a therapist of their own, right, to get some of those resources. But I also think that open communication and like being vulnerable with friends, right? Like you said, people look like they're, right, like they have it all together, but really there's stuff going on. My best friend, she is like, I'm always like, how are your kids so perfect? How is everything right? But then it'll be like, okay, so this happened, right? Like, I have no idea what to do with it. She's a social worker, right? And we both have to be like bouncing ideas off of each other as well, just because like we both have spouses too, but especially when you don't have that heavy support system, right? Find somebody that you can work with, find somebody that you can trust and really just be vulnerable. Because people don't, not everybody has it together. Most people mm-hmm. don't have it together. We want to fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like we want to present that we do, but in all reality, it's a lot nicer to have that common ground and have somebody that you can talk to. Like you and I have always talked about the mental health aspect, right? I don't talk to everybody about it. You find your people, but having somebody or a friend or, you know, somebody you can talk to really helps. Mm-hmm. Makes you not feel so alone.
Yeah. Right. And, it is, it feels like a very lonely job mm-hmm. being a parent. And also I think, what's really hard is they're finding their autonomy younger. So their brains are developing
slower,
but they're finding their autonomy sooner. And so it almost feels like an affront from yep. your kids, right? Oh my gosh, you don't love me. Where's my little kid? You yep. know? And I think as parents, we are going to have to do for our own sanity and for our relationships with our kids, we're going to have to find ways to relate to them in their way.
Yep.
Finding ways to connect. I am anti-social media, always have been, just because the work that I do, I don't choose to be in social media, yep. but I've connected with my kids a lot better using Instagram. And that was a 2 month ago thing where I'm loading them up with memes, you know, like here's something positive, here's this. And I'm feeling like they are relating differently to me. And so I think there's this piece of us that has to divorce ourselves from the I'm the parent and I said so to this notion of, okay, you're going to find your own path in your life. I want to be not only part of it, but I want to be your guidepost. Mm-hmm. So how can I insert myself in here where you can accept it? And that's hard for parents.
But it's also hard, like, again, exposure. Kids are exposed to stuff so much younger, right? So then they have that autonomy earlier. But just like you said, we do the same thing or something very similar. My husband's into the reels on Instagram, but my girls usually do TikTok a little bit more. I'll try, but like navigating it for me even is hard, right? Like, and I know that as time goes on, it gets better, but like sending them TikToks, sending them reels of like, even if it's just something dumb, right? Oh, they're stuck in their room. I've asked 400 times for them to come out, right? Like I can only ask so much or be like, come on, let's go do this. Come on, let's go get off your phone, put your phone away. Let's do this, right? And so instead now it's like, we'll send something and then like, you know, maybe go comment about it, right? Like I'll go up and be like, oh my gosh, did you see, like, do you agree or whatever? Or they'll send something back and then I'll go up and comment on it instead of just sending another or sending a comment back just to get that FaceTime, mm-hmm. right? And then I'll see them do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get that, at least I had to get to their level. Mm-hmm. I'm still working through it and they make fun of me and I make fun of myself because I'm always like, I'm learning, or I'll be like, how do I do this, right? And then they can show me. They can show me those skills that they just have. And that again builds that relationship to try to work through like, hey, I want to get there. I want your help to get there. And then they feel it. It's more real. You're there. You're trying to live it in the moment with them.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
It is. And that really goes back to attachment therapy, you know, where, you know, you're really working to bring yourself into your child's environment. And especially because I think kids are emotionally they're slower developing emotionally. Yes. And everything feels big. Mm-hmm. Everything feels big. And maybe it always did feel big, but for me, it feels amplified because
I think it's that they have different language than we did.
Maybe that's true.
Right? Because you'll hear kids that, you know, they're just having a bad day or it's stressful today. And instead of just being like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so bipolar.
Yeah. Or like, I just want to kill myself. And I'm like, no, we don't say things like that because, you know, that
so much exposure
creates that fear again, mm-hmm. as parents, like, are you okay? Do you need to see someone? And they're like, oh my God, I'm just having a bad day. Okay. And so sometimes what we try to do at the Bridge is help parents find what's normal teenage angst. Yep. Versus what's really something going on. And it sometimes looks exactly the same.
Got it.
And so it's very challenging to dig in and figure out, okay, when is it my turn to go, nope, it's time for us to do something. And I see that a lot with parents. We're just a bunch of people who are lost trying to raise our kids.
Best we can.
And there are people, you know, who are, again, doing it just fine. And I would say a lot of people are doing just fine. But we just want our kids to get through high school, mm-hmm. get into college, be able to pay for college, right?
It is true, though, that stress of everything else and the idea of, like, we were talking before this, but right. We have kids that are in driving. Now we have college coming up. Our kids play sports, club sports, right? So there's that also that like financial pressure that you're putting on that is more extreme, right? College has gone up significantly from when we were younger. So there's extra added stress and pressure on top of all the different parenting and the social media aspects and all these influences that our kids have. So there's like more than one just dynamic that's changed mm-hmm. so much in terms of kind of our current reality. And sports, right? Like we'd play just on the park district sports and then you'd go to high school and you'd make the team. Well, now if you're not playing these club sports, it's like hard to make the high school. And so there's that added pressure of like, I have to be able to be perfect to be able to make this. Or if I don't start when I'm younger, I'm not going to have an opportunity when I'm older. And so there's a lot of, I think there's some misconception, right? It's not 100% true, but kids feel that, right? Like you hear kids talking about, well, if I don't do this, I'm not going to hear, right? And some of it's legit, but a lot of it is more extreme than what's reality, right? And so trying to figure out that balance with kids is also really difficult. Mm-hmm. And not knowing ourselves, right? Like you don't know until you get there,
right,
what it's going to kind of like, what the future holds and where, what it really looks like and all of that. So,
yeah,
you know, again, our parents faced it. It's not like they didn't, it's just in a different way.
Yeah. So let's talk about, finding supports and services for kids. So I was having dinner with a friend and she's a social worker. And she said, I don't think there's any such thing as a good therapist for a teenager. Mm. And I was really offended, first of all, because I'm like, the Bridges, that's what we do, you know? And so not just teens, but we have a lot of teenagers that come through. And so I was at first offended, but then I was like, well, say more about that. And she gave me good reasons because they had looked and looked for a good match for her kiddo, and they never found one. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was the anxiety meds that really sort of helped her out. Plus, my friend is a social worker, so I'm sure she was giving her tips, right, and tricks. Tell me about, you know, what you think.
We've gone through our fair share of people, right? Some that have been good, but my kids have been dismissed, even though they still were struggling internally. Right, which tells me they didn't quite have that connection to maybe understand each other. But I think there's almost so many resources, but then not really, right? Like you can find a ton of different places to go to, but not everybody has the right qualifications or has that same personality. And then you hear about, oh, there's these wait lists that are a year long. And so then it feels like you're powerless to go and do something, right? So when I first started, right, I did everything myself. It was like, okay, I'm going to find you the right person and we're going to go and I'm going to take you and it's going to work, right? And then my oldest was kind of like, nope, I'm not going. Like, I don't need this. I don't want to go. I don't need to talk to somebody, right? And then slowly we started to kind of start looking with her, bring her into the process of like, you know, most places have a biography or like a little snippet of like what the, what a therapist or a counselor might look like. But again, that open communication, right? Communication is kind of everything. We communicated with our pediatrician first and talked through like pieces with there. And then it was like conversations with each girl that was going. And then it was trying to find the right, maybe the right fit or the right match. And you mentioned medication, like that's a whole nother layer, right? Like, do we need some medication to go with it or do we just need some therapy? And people will push one or the other, right? And it just depends. And you have to really just communicate and figure out that right balance. But it takes time. And I think trusting the process and knowing that, like, you know, you might not find the right service provider immediately, whether it's a therapist or a psychologist or, right, a pediatrician or doctor. Like I've gone through many myself, right, just looking for different things, and it just takes time. But it also sometimes feels like it's a pressure of like, well, this something is going on right now and I need to fix it right now, and I need to have that control of being able to, right, get the right person. And when it doesn't, you feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. Right, like, well, then why would I go see somebody else, or why should I go and, you know, like, oh, that therapist says she's fine. Maybe I'm imagining this problem. Maybe it's not really needed, right? So it's a tricky balance of trying to find. But again, pediatrician, school psychologists, school psychs, like, have so many resources. There's a ton of resources available. It just takes finding the right one, or finding somebody who can help you and support you. So I think it's not necessarily an easy task, but it's a task worth kind of pushing through to find. My girls have fantastic therapists right now that we love and adore. But it took time to get there. Mm-hmm. Right. And using all the different ways and connections and just being open with people and, asking for that help, mm-hmm. which feels scary. Right? Asking for help is scary.
It is scary. It is. And we also are worried about opening our book, mm-hmm. right, to the page that we didn't want people to see. So on the way in today, you were telling me about a book that you're reading or you have read, that gives great tips for parents on sort of, can you just actually, I'm not going to speak for you. You can just say.
It's a book called Calm the Chaos. And it was recommended for me from my boss at work, actually. It's for parents. But like I said, I'm a behavior coach. And so it's kind of just a way to calm everything down, right? Like our problems, I just had feel so big and in the moment. And there's times where we feel like we're just in this cycle that is never going to end, right? Teenagers have a lot of emotions. We have a lot of emotions. And sometimes it feels really just overwhelming. Like there's not peace in our house right now. And what can I even do to stop this, right? And so this book kind of just goes through like step by step of things that you could do as a parent to just begin to slowly kind of change our ways, right? So a lot of the times we have to control or change kind of what we're doing to help support our kid, right? Those consequences and all of that doesn't teach any skills, right? So if we're not teaching the skills that they're missing or that they're developing, we're not really going to get anywhere. We're going to live in that cycle of kind of messy, icky. Everybody feels kind of, let's just go in our rooms and not really talk to each other. Or when we are together, there's just a lot of fighting or there's a lot of yelling or, you know, nobody can do anything right. And so it just kind of goes through step by step of things that you can do to slowly make your way to feel that you have some kind of, like you have the ability, right? And things can change. And so it's just a very nice, slow pace. There's steps and you kind of, like I read one and I was like, okay, I'm going to live in this for a little bit before I even touch the book again. Right. Then I did another one and that's where my post-its kind of started, right? Like I have to remind myself to do this because if I don't take the time, this cycle is going to keep going. Right. And so it just slowly walks you through and really got to the point where like, okay, we're at a place where now we can really begin to parent again. Mm-hmm. And how we go about that parenting, right? We might need to look at other resources. And I know you've recommended a couple books to me. But looking at those pieces of like, okay, now what can I do as a parent to make sure that we don't get right back into that cycle of it being tension and mom versus, or, you know, parents versus kids kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get stuck there.
It is. Any parting gift that you want to leave for anybody listening?
I think just again, that being open and honest, and I think allowing yourself to be a little vulnerable in front of your kids and validating and letting them know that they're not alone, right? Like without just saying I've been there, right? Oh, that happened to me when I was a kid. Like we still are, right? We already talked about like, we want to be perfect. We want to make sure that we're feeling good, but we're not sure. Right. And being open about it. Like, I'm not really sure how to handle this. Like, let's get somebody else to help us out. Right. And being open and willing to show and grow as a person yourself is really a way. So kind of leading by that example, which again, you don't want people to see, you don't want them to open to that page in your book, but it's reality. Mm-hmm. Right. And so being vulnerable, being open and really working through things together is hard, but worth it. Mm-hmm. Very worth it.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I'm sure that you know this already, but The Bridge has several opportunities for people to receive services. We have therapists on site, counselors on site. We specialize in family stabilization to help families navigate conflict, do family therapy, parent seminars, and lots of groups. So if anybody is in need of any services, bridgeyouth.org is where they can find us. Thank you so much for coming on today and talking to me and this very important topic.
Thanks for having me.